Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Three nights of clashes between protesters and National Guard troops President Trump called up against the wishes of California's governor and the mayor of Los Angeles. ABC's Matt Gutman was there when the protests broke out.
CHP, California Highway Patrol, deployed smoke. They're moving in, trying to push these protesters out. You can see some projectiles containing someone there.
The LAPD mobilizing resources and LA's mayor pleading for calm.
Our city does not need to be torn apart.
Earlier Sunday, demonstrators swarming LA's federal building, hundreds of LAPD officers responding.
Israeli forces seized a boat bound for the Gaza Strip overnight. Greta Thunberg and other activists were on board, along with aid for Palestinians who have been cut off from food and fuel amid the fighting between Israel and Hamas. Russia launching 479 drones at Ukraine in the war's biggest overnight bombardment. They also shot at least 20 missiles as well. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The National Weather Service is warning of severe staffing shortages in Wisconsin and that none of their offices in the state have a chief meteorologist. The agency has three offices covering a majority of the state, with the Northwest region covered by offices in Minneapolis and Duluth. Due to federal cuts under the Trump administration, the remaining offices have also cut some of their services, like balloon launches. The cuts come as Wisconsin sees more tornadoes than usual, having already nearly hit the average of 23 that the state sees in a year. On Thursday, the United States Supreme Court ruled that a Catholic charity in Wisconsin does not need to pay state unemployment taxes. The unanimous decision found that the state violated the Catholic Charity Bureau's religious freedom guarantee under the First Amendment. Wisconsin argued the organization did not qualify for a tax exemption because their day-to-day work does not involve religious teachings, and a large portion of their funding comes from public sources. The organization argued their disability services are motivated by religious beliefs. A Grantsburg man has been sentenced to life in prison in connection to a 2023 homicide in Burnett County. According to court documents, David Edeburn Jr. was accused of stabbing and killing Brittany Holland of Siren in September of 2023. He reportedly called law enforcement authorities following the stabbing to have four children removed from the property and told them that he had killed Holland. Authorities later arrested him at his Grantsburg residence. Edeburn Jr. entered a no-contest plea to charges of first-degree intentional homicide last year. The first of two people charged in relation to a Sawyer County standoff involving firearms and explosives has been sentenced to prison. 40-year-old Zachary Horan and 47-year-old Michael Aaron Colalillo Sr. faced multiple charges in relation to the January incident. According to court documents, the incident began when Colalillo Sr. and the victim at the Sawyer County residence got into a physical altercation during a disagreement about security cameras. Horan was previously convicted, and the charges against Colalillo Sr. are still proceeding. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers release Jair. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NFL. The Green Bay Packers have decided to part ways with Jair Alexander. ESPN reporting the 28-year-old defensive back was prepared to report to the team's minicamp tomorrow. Jair Alexander has missed over half the games the past two seasons due to injury. Baseball tonight. The Brewers opening a three-game series at home against the Atlanta Braves. Veteran lefty Chris Sale on the mound for the Braves against Milwaukee's right-hander Aaron Savalier. The Brewers losing 1-0 yesterday to the Padres. Desperate to score a run. Pat Murphy admitted after the game he gambled, putting in a pinch runner in for Rhys Hoskins in the seventh, saying it was a mistake considering Hoskins could have had another at-bat in the ninth.
It's one of those decisions. Seventh, eighth, or ninth, do you pinch run for your slowest guy? It backfired today. It wasn't the right call today, that's for sure.
NBA Finals, the Pacers losing to the Thunder 123-107. Game 3 in Indianapolis Wednesday night with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thundershowers possible today and a high in the mid to upper 60s this afternoon. Tonight, an isolated shower, thundershower possible, low in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny and warmer with a high tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 51.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips piece does not at all even come close to addressing the problem of wages in this country. You know, a third of workers who work for tips in the first place don't make enough money to pay taxes at all.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
We need a fun listener name, something the followers of the show can call themselves. I thought, how about Couch Potatoes?
Potatoes.
I said it as a joke, and Todd cracked up. He goes, I love that. Whatever it is, folks, embrace your inner couch potato. We are not meant to work in the farms and hunt food. We were 1,000 years ago. But now, I think God wants us to sit back and be entertained.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Maggie Dawn.
At 5 p.m., I'll be joined with UW Wisconsin Law School professor Aaron Barbato to talk about immigration processes. We dispel myths and give you the real scoop.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on after 11 o'clock. In the Tom Hartman Show, you want to be listening for the keyword that you want to text in. We are in the midst of our statewide Sconny Summer Text to Win contest every day through this week.
Mm-hmm.
In the 7, 11, 2, and 4 o'clock hours, you will have a keyword you want to text in using the Civic Media app. And you're in the running either for $100 in cash or a pair of Milwaukee Brewers Club tickets. And then the grand prize is a Wisconsin summer vacation in either Door County or Baraboo with money to get you there.
Nice.
Nice. Four daily chances to enter now through this Friday. So again, be listening after 11 o'clock in the Tom Hartman Show for your keyword for our Sconny Summer Statewide Text to Win contest. Going to start off just briefly with this, because there was a lot of news that happened over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened on Friday, which I think kind of got buried by everything happening in Los Angeles and Donald Trump calling in the National Guard and all of those things. But the headline from the Wisconsin Examiner says, wrongly deported Maryland man Abrego Garcia returned to the U.S. You may recall many Trump administration officials saying out loud, he's not coming back. There's no way to bring him back.
Nope.
El Salvador is a sovereign country. We have nothing to do with it. He is in their custody. That's it. He's there.
The president said, I have no power to bring him back.
Yeah, that was not true. He's back.
Yep.
Abrego Garcia landed in the U.S. on Friday. Now they are accusing him of being a human smuggler. Originally, he was an MS-13 gang member.
Yes.
Right?
Correct. Yep. That they had a court said absolutely without equivocation that he had no proof that he was a part of a gang. So it was just pushing a narrative over. And we heard people say he's in a gang, but there's no proof that he was in a gang.
Yeah, it's that whole proof thing. But again, a Maryland Democrat, Chris Van Hollen, says, as I have repeatedly said, this is not about the man. It's about his constitutional rights and the rights of all.
Yes.
So, again, if he is found guilty of these things, then deport him. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that. The problem I have is with our government snatching people off the streets and deporting them without putting them through due process to which they are entitled, citizen or not.
Correct. Yep. We spoke at great length with Jim Santel, with Judge Paul Michel about this. The Constitution does not just cover, well, if it says all, it means anyone. Also, there's no such thing as habeas corpus for some. It's for all or
it's
none.
For all or
and
none.
And it either is in effect or is not effect. It can't just be like, well, Jane, we like you, so you get some habeas corpus, but Calvin, you don't get any habeas corpus because we don't like your glasses. So that's not how it works.
No, that is not how it works.
No.
So at least, again, Kilmar Abrego Garcia is back in the United States. He returned on Friday. Contrary to all the things that the Trump administration told us, no, there's nothing we can do. He's there. He's never coming back. Oh, now he's back.
Well, now he's back, and now he's more dangerous than ever. And
right.
We should have just wrote a list of other suspected crimes of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. That was because before it was MS-13. That was just it, even though there was no proof, and the court said that. And he was a protected person in this country.
And from Maryland. Yep.
But now he's come back and he is just, I mean, he's back in America and he's done all these things. And it's just, okay, you're just going to pile on all these claims, not charges,
not proof,
not convictions, but just, you know, as you said, Jane, bring him back. Let him face the
Let him go through his due process,
yeah,
and then take it from there.
Yeah.
But I did see another, and just briefly because we're going to move on, but I did see another article this morning that said 25% so far of the people that ICE have taken into custody have no criminal records.
And they know that, too. Like, this is willy-nilly. Pulling people up at graduation ceremonies, at hospitals, and in courtrooms. And this is not the way to do things.
I thought the whole goal was to get rid of dangerous felons.
Mm-hmm. Or just people.
Dangerous criminals.
Or people who are here illegally or didn't go through the process. I also understand that motive as well. But yeah, the criminals were the number one problem. They were.
Got to get the criminals off the street.
If we don't get the criminals off the street, then the streets aren't safe, Jane. And what are we going to do? But no, it just seems willy-nilly.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Okay, we're going to move on to things a little bit more local and talk about the Wisconsin state budget.
Oh, great.
Robin Voss, Speaker of the Assembly, on Upfront on Channel 12 yesterday, speaking to Matt Smith. Robin Voss says it's a lie that the Republicans refuse to invest in education and child care as the budget talks break down. Robin Voss telling WISN's Upfront, we're willing to do it, just not as much as Governor Evers wanted. That's the difference. He makes it sound like we were at zero. We were not at zero on any of these topics. We tried to find a way to invest in childcare that actually went to the parents and to make sure that we weren't just having to go to a business. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But what the Republicans suggested that we talked about last week was giving a tax incentive to businesses to open childcare centers.
Correct. And
did I imagine that?
No, we talked about it. There was an article. I know I posted that article in the show notes. But like, there are a bunch of components to this matter. And we've had Corrine Hendrickson on many times. She's been on many shows here on the Civic Media Network. And it's about incentivizing the businesses that run the daycare centers themselves. One of their big things is giving some money to release so they don't have to keep raising their prices.
Right.
To pay their people a little bit more. Not millions of dollars a year, but I think they said their target was to get them at $13, which is quite reasonable in my opinion. And for the work they do, still underpaid. But also, yeah, like there's the parents, there are the businesses. And I mean, I don't actually have a problem with them incentivizing companies to open up their own daycare centers, but that shouldn't be the only thing they're doing.
Right.
Which seems like the only thing they're doing.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any other things suggested from the Republicans, and I would love to see more businesses step up to this, but yeah, the fact that we're not seeing that makes you wonder if this is a good enough incentive.
I think it's a misdirected incentive. It comes back to the age-old thing of, like, they just want to help businesses. They think businesses can do it right. But what's weird is that, I don't know, Corrine Hendrickson and all of her colleagues, they're business owners.
They are business owners.
They employ people. They're job creators. They contribute to the economy. And if you give them the ability to run their business well, and you know, I don't think any of them are looking for handouts that will allow them to become billionaires.
No.
But you allow them to have a partnership with a state that runs a solid business, then it's going to be a net gain for the parents, a net gain for the child, a net gain for those businesses. Because I bet you a lot of those businesses who are not in childcare are like, I don't want to open a daycare. Do you know what will happen if I do that? Or if I, what I have to do in order to get that to happen.
So, yeah.
It's Robin Voss. Robin Voss always says no, even when he says he's saying yes. So I don't trust him as far as I can throw him.
Well, and the other thing that kind of jumped out at me during this conversation, again, Robin Voss and Upfront on WISN yesterday talking to Matt Smith, who does a great job. But Robin Voss never once talked specifics.
No.
He never talked actual numbers.
No.
So it's just the governor asked for too much. We didn't give him what he wanted, so the governor walked away. Well, we'd like a little more specifics about what you offered him in these deals.
Yeah, well, one of the things they said, you know, in the education portion of the conversation with regard to the UW system, he said that they want to require professors to work 12 hours to show they're working at least 12 credits.
One of the things we wanted was a guarantee you'd have every professor teaching at least 12 credits. So 12 hours in the classroom for a full-time job. And they just couldn't get there. Robin, maybe let's not talk about full-time jobs.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, also, do you know what it takes to be a professor at a college level? If I'm not mistaken, because I have friends who've taught in college, you can be an associate professor, you can be a teacher, you're teaching classes, but some of these professors are there because they were brought by the university to do research.
And write papers,
be published, and raise the profile of those universities. So, yeah, they'll teach, but they're not going to teach all the classes. That's why you have TAs and assistants, and that's why, like, the system's in place to do it. I mean, my parents didn't want me to go to college and say, like, but you better make sure that you're being taught by teachers. That's not how this works. So his concern all of a sudden for the way the UW system is, it just seems – but then again, this is the same guy who said – we gave more money to the public school system than anyone else in a generation. Yeah, because they were getting nothing before.
For a decade.
Yeah, if you're more giving than a decade. $5, that's more.
Yeah. Robin Voss also said that we want tax relief for the middle class, and we believe that it should be something focused on retirees, keeping more people in Wisconsin by having a lower tax burden and hopefully not having people move to a warmer climate for 6 months a year.
Yeah, that also doesn't make sense to me. And if there's anybody who's listening who
snowbird?
Who lives in Florida or Arizona for anywhere 3 to 6 months a year to get away from the winter, I get it. My mom's slowly going that way too. But as far as I know, my mom, in her retirement, she's not a citizen of Arizona. She's a citizen of Wisconsin. So any taxes that are incurred on her behalf that she has to pay,
she pays in Wisconsin.
So I don't know what this means. Either it is, once again, a nice Robin Voss workaround where he's just saying a bunch of words that sounds smart, or he is truly ignorant to how people pay taxes.
Yeah, we were talking about this before we came on the air, too. And again, so for 6 months, they're not going to pay sales taxes here.
Correct, yeah.
But if you are a snowbird, I'm curious to know, would you not go to Florida for 6 months if your taxes were lower?
Yeah. Well, they want to like do a thing of like it's no tax on $75,000 a year, like your first $75,000 a year, which at the end of the day, for me personally, it's Robin Voss. So it's always there's when they say tax cuts for the middle class, it's really not. It's tax cuts for their buddies, for their donors, for themselves.
Pretty much.
I have yet to see a real plan from the Republicans that gives a solid tax cut, not just for retirees. No offense, retirees. I want you to get your money, get your bag, kids. But also tax cuts for, you know, like for me and my wife, we don't have children, so we miss out on a child tax credit.
Yep.
Just a basic middle-class tax cut that benefits us all. Show me the work. Show me the money. Show me how you're going to get it done. Don't just go on TV and talk about how Tony Evers can't be worked with.
Robin also says he's not overly concerned with the massive tax and spending plan moving through Congress, despite projections it will affect Medicaid and food share. Robin Voss says, I'm not all that worried. It's an exaggeration for my friends on the left. There are not cuts in Medicaid. When they tell you there are cuts, it's untrue. Okay. We're going to return after the break and talk about someone who worked for Doge and the vast waste, fraud, and abuse he found. That's all on the way. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt Nair on Air.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, backed by Donald Trump, that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uihlein. In 2018 alone, the Uihleins received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. June is Pollinator Month, and some Wisconsin lawmakers have introduced a package of bills to protect our bees, butterflies, and other insects. The bills would prevent the DNR from using a class of pesticides called neonicotinoids, which are known to harm pollinators. It would also prevent retailers from labeling plants as pollinator-friendly if they've been treated with high levels of pesticides. Great Lakes fisheries could struggle under budget cuts. President Trump is pushing Congress to eliminate the entire biological research program at the U.S. Geological Survey. The ecosystem mission area monitors and conducts research on fish and wildlife populations in the Great Lakes and beyond. If passed, federal wildlife and fisheries research centers across Wisconsin would be shuttered. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into environmental issues across the state, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elder Care Locator is here to help you live your best life as you age at home. Our call center advisors are ready to connect you with trustworthy local experts. Help is just a phone call away at 1-800-677-1116.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 9:30 news, Matt Randolph, Mr. Global Oil and Gas Industry Expert, will be joining us as he does every quarter now. So stick around for Matt Randolph coming up after the 9:30 news. Right now, though, we were talking about Robin Voss appearing on Upfront on WISN over the weekend and talking about all the waste and fraud and abuse in the federal government. And I just wanted to do this quickly before we get to some really important things in the budget.
Yes.
A former employee of Doge said he found federal waste, fraud, and abuse were relatively non-existent.
What?
Sahil Lavinga told NPR, "I personally was pretty surprised, actually, at how efficient the government is." Lavinga is a software developer. He joined Doge in March. He told NPR he just really wanted to make government websites easier. That's why they brought him in. I thought, cool. This is cool.
Yeah.
But he says, "In working there, I did not find the federal government to be rife with waste, fraud, and abuse. I was expecting some more easy wins. I was hoping for an opportunity to cut waste, fraud, and abuse. I do believe there's a lot of waste. There are minimal amounts of fraud, and abuse to me feels relatively non-existent." We've talked about this before. Again, it's easy to say we keep finding waste, fraud, and abuse. Fraud is a crime.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I would like to see these cases move forward in the courts from all these people who are committing fraud mm-hmm. and getting benefits they're not supposed to.
It just seems like all the wasteful spending they did seem to find either was being done, quote unquote, done by departments that had who Elon Musk had a vested interest in staying away from, or social programs that just seem to help the people.
Yeah.
And for minimal money in terms of government spending, when you're talking about like millions,
even $5 million is nothing.
Seven digit to even low eight digit yeah. numbers. That's nothing in government spending, and to attack those programs, and they're usually social programs,
yes.
helping the, wait for it, the poor, it just seems more targeted and, I don't know, just mean. I know that sounds very childlike, but it's doing it because those individuals have no power. They don't have the ear of a senator or a congressman.
Well, and who's going to fight for them?
Exactly.
Who's going to fight for them?
You can't, nobody, because they fired everyone who could fight for them.
Well, thankfully,
yeah.
there is someone out there to fight for the tanning bed people.
Who?
The tanning bed people.
Are they a huge lobby?
Came up over the weekend. They slipped, you know, a couple of things in that big budget bill. We did mention them last week.
Yeah.
But, Calvin, I believe we have a clip from Speaker of the House Mike Johnson talking about tanning beds. Mm-hmm. And this break, we're going to give tanning bed owners. Let's take a listen.
Right to.
What about tanning beds? It eliminates a 10% tax on tanning beds. I mean, how did that become a priority for
well, you? I think that was an unfair thing that the Biden administration put Wait. On industry because they decided
it was actually,
to target.
It goes back to 2010. Yeah. It's been around for
yeah.
15
Long years. Time.
Yes, but the Biden administration enhanced it. And there'd be modifications probably to that in the final package as well. But we'll see how it comes out.
What?
I love that. Biden did this. Well, Obama actually implemented it, and it was for health reasons too. Wasn't
yes.
just because they hated.
And there were lots
beds.
Of health groups that signed on yeah. to this.
But Biden enhanced it. How? Biden? Oh my gosh! Like it must be great to be Barack Obama, because before it was all him. Thanks, Obama. Obama did this. It's Obama.
Now it's all now, Biden's fault.
Oh my gosh, I stubbed my toe. Well, because of Biden's policies,
right.
I stubbed my toe on my bed because my bed is too small. You know, listening to him, and honestly, he's in similar jobs. When I listen to him or Robin Voss try to weasel their way out of policies, they're just, let's face it, this one's ridiculous. This is ridiculous to just be like, well, it's Biden. This is because
but
of Biden.
That's their go-to.
Yeah.
That's the go-to excuse yeah. for everything. Also slipped in this bill is a little thing about gun silencers, which I know Wisconsin's Joint Finance Committee heard all about when mm-hmm. they went around traveling around Wisconsin, and all the people who came forward pro-gun silencer. Calvin, let's play that clip, please.
One, there's a provision that eliminates a tax on gun silencers. Now, this is a tax that has been on the books for about 100 years.
Long time.
Why are you suddenly cutting a tax on silencers?
Well, there's a lot of thought and deliberation that went into that as well. The Second Amendment is a critical freedom in the Constitution, and there's no real rationale for adding taxes on these pieces of equipment. And we had the votes to do it. I think it was a long time overdue. I think we have to protect the fundamental freedoms of the American people. And there's no rationale. The government should not be making money on something that you have a fundamental inalienable right to.
Hold on 1 second here. I'm just going to look up. I just want the Second Amendment. I just want to read this.
Yeah, bring up the
Second
Amendment.
Unless they've amended the amendment, the Second Amendment of the Constitution mm-hmm. protects the right. The text says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to secure the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Nothing in here about silencers.
That's because they didn't exist when
no
they wrote
silencers.
That.
Would have been really. I mean, it was hard to load a gun back in those days. Could you imagine attaching a silencer to a musket?
Yeah.
I don't really see this as a free and fundamental thing.
Well,
it's just
and I
taxes.
I believe that this legislation was authored by a Republican in the House who owns a gun shop.
That's right. He does. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just one of those little things they slipped in there. So, Wisconsinites, let's call our Republican representatives who all voted for this measure
mm-hmm.
and just ask them about the tanning bed thing and the gun silencer thing. If you're not sure how to contact them, go to myvote.wi.gov. Myvote.wi.gov. www.wi.gov. Let's call Robin Voss. Well, not Robin Voss. Call Scott Fitzgerald and Brian Stile and all our other Republicans. Call Glenn Grothman and ask him. He's using tanning beds, isn't he? That's who this is for. News is coming up next. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding residents to be on the lookout for black bears at this time of year. According to DNR officials, bears begin their mating season in June and mothers begin to turn their cubs away to keep them safe from male bears. Without being able to rely on their mothers, those cubs will begin looking for other food sources. Residents should be aware that bear cubs could start wandering into their neighborhoods looking for things like bird feeders, pet food that has been left outside, or even grills that haven't been cleaned. The Wisconsin State Patrol says they handed out over 1,300 citations during their Click It or Ticket campaign around Memorial Day weekend. According to a press release, the special enforcement campaign ran from May 19th to June 1st. The campaign was meant to encourage residents to wear their seatbelts when they're driving to avoid more significant injuries in the event of a crash during a busy travel season. Even though the special enforcement campaign is over, the Wisconsin State Patrol is reminding drivers that they will still enforce seatbelt laws. At their meeting last week, the Hayward School Board expressed support for hiring a second school resource officer next year. School board officials say the hiring of a second officer had been put on hold by Mayor Gary Gillis until the board had voted on supporting the addition. A majority of board members expressed their support for the measure last week, but an official vote won't be taken until their June 16th meeting. Some board members warned of possible instability with future funding, which could be exacerbated by adding the second position. The Barron Area School District is among 25 districts across the state to receive a grant funding award through the Marshfield Clinic Center for Community Health Advancement. According to organization officials, the grant funding was provided through the Social Emotional Learning Life Tools Program. The goal of the initiative is to help students build emotional and social skills that help them thrive inside and outside of the classroom. The program includes an 8-week course taking place after school hours with a school counselor, social worker, or professional counselor. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Not sure if Steve Carell has big feet, but his shoes will be tough to fill. No one knows that more than Domhnall Gleeson, who will play the boss on a new spinoff of NBC's The Office. The paper will feature the same documentary film crew from The Office, even though it was never really featured, as they record the daily happenings of a dying local newspaper, and it will be brought to you by the same team that brought you the American version of The Office. Gleeson, the son of actor Brendan Gleeson, knows the challenges he faces. The actor said he recently received encouraging words from Carell's Office co-star, John Krasinski, who reassured the actor that he was in great hands with executive producer Greg Daniels. Daniels successfully rebooted Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's show of the same title from the UK. Although the title is different, the challenges faced in the paper are the same faced by those who ran a fictitious paper company. There is no release date yet, but the paper will premiere in September on Peacock. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thundershowers possible today and a high in the mid to upper 60s this afternoon. Tonight, an isolated shower, thundershower possible, low in the low 50s. Tomorrow will be sunny and warmer with a high tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 51.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
All right, time to visit with Melissa Baldoff as we talk climate issues. Acting FEMA chief told staff he didn't know about U.S. hurricane seasons.
What?
Speechless too.
I mean,
I love it. We're all just sitting here like, what?
If it is a joke, and I don't know that it is, it's not a funny one. We've seen more deadly hurricanes, so we have every reason to expect it will be a bad hurricane season.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Michael Negron of the Small Business Majority.
You know, the Trump administration thinks that they're doing a solid for small business with their policies. And so having business owners out there talking about how, whether it's tariffs, whether it's potential cuts to health care, how it's going to hurt their bottom line, how it's going to hurt their consumers or their employees. I do think that will have a real impact. Every time he does something, he gets really bad feedback and he retreats in the face of it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from the show Young Sheldon, actor Lance Barber, and we'll talk about the amazing career and life of Michael J. Fox. We are going to light it like it's Monday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Sweet Calvi on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Delighted to have him back Mondays with Mr. Global. Matt Randolph is here, oil and gas industry expert. Good morning, Matt. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
We are good. Thank you. Good to see you again. Lots of things going on. Just a couple. We wanted to start. I know. I thought we would start, Matt, with Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum visited Alaska. And I've seen some things, some chatter about the Trans-Alaska LNG pipeline. So that's why Doug Burgum was there, talking about how great this is, and it's all about making America energy dependent, and we're going to drill, drill, drill. And so what do you know about this Trans-Alaska pipeline?
Well, you know, first of all, the administration keeps pushing these projects that could have easily been done any time in the last 50 years if they were actually economically viable. Like, they just keep, you know, this thing in Alaska with the LNG, wanting to double oil production, build another pipeline. There's been no real restrictions there that would have ever stopped anyone from doing that if they thought it was the best place to invest their money. So I just want to say that right off the bat.
Sure. But,
the vast majority of, you know, this project would all just be gas that would be exported out of the country. It wouldn't help, you know, as far as energy goes, it wouldn't help the United States at all. It would make corporations a few billion dollars, I'm sure. But this is all for export, like everything else we do now is to export.
I think that's really important that folks understand that, because, again, If you don't dig too deeply into some of this stuff, it sounds pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, let's get another pipeline, and this is going to help America become energy independent, and gas prices will come down and all of that stuff. But when you dig a little deeper into it, as you said, this is just a transportation portal for fuel to leave the United States. But first it gets to cross the United States. Right?
Yeah, and you know, I don't know the economics of it, but I have serious doubts about whether this is even economically feasible. You're talking about basically one company would be producing natural gas and having to build one singular 700-mile pipeline across the state of Alaska to get this gas to an LNG terminal just to send. You know, we've built LNG terminals all across the Gulf Coast, and that's because there's just tons of existing infrastructure there to support that. There's tons of pipelines already there, you know, from offshore and the Northeast Corridor. Everything anyone would need to do that is already there. They're going to have to build this from scratch. And I just don't see how it's economically feasible. But you did say one thing. I don't know if you heard my new catchphrase. It makes sense if you don't think about it, right? You kind of touched on that a second ago. I started saying that the other day and it took off. So I
like it. That works. It makes a whole lot of sense. Just don't think about it too hard.
Yes. But no, you're right.
Yeah. I think the big problem though is, like, you know, when you don't think about it, and all, and as Jane said, when you just say we're going to drill and we're going to do this, and then when you try to offer just even a small bit of advice or a small bit of information on this, it then becomes, well, you're wrong. You're just fake. Why don't you want us to have energy independence? Well, I mean, I'm not saying we don't take in oil exports from other countries, but we are rather, we have a lot of oil that we can drill, that we've been drilling for ourselves. Am I wrong?
No, that is exactly right.
Yeah. So this narrative of like energy independence, it sounds really good and it sounds great if you love America, and I love America, but it also just is a false narrative. And going to like mentioning the prices too is like one of the things that Donald Trump said he was going to do. I don't think he said it on day one, but he did say he was going to do this, was cut energy prices in half. I just need to know, because you're an expert, has that happened?
No.
Okay.
No, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
Well, and let's go, because we talked about this with you before. And again, for people who are not familiar with you, Matt Randolph is an oil and gas industry expert. This is something that you have to earn. Mm-hmm. It's not like you get to be self-title yourself this thing. You actually have to earn it. And he's got 30 years experience in the oil and gas industry, so he knows of what he speaks. But again, a lot of those things just sound good. When he first talked about cutting oil and energy by 50%, you essentially said, well, then we're going to stop producing natural gas. We're going to stop doing all these things, because if energy producers don't make any money, what is their incentive to do these things?
Yeah. And, you know, we've done the math on this. You know, oil would have to be below $20 a barrel to cut the price of gasoline in half. And I was interviewed by a gentleman named SV Date with the Huffington Post, and did an article that was back before the election. And when I told him this, it just blew his mind. And I'm like, there's no cutting gas prices in half. That's just not a thing. Like it's 2025 and inflation is a thing that exists, right? Mm-hmm. And you're wanting prices to go back to like what they were 60 years ago. Nothing costs what it did 60 years ago when adjusted for inflation, right?
Right.
it's just, and you have to think in terms of how an oil company thinks. You know, we go back to this LNG thing and all this oil in Alaska. If you was to ask anybody, you know, what's an oil and gas disaster, you know, the Exxon Valdez would be one they would bring up, right?
Sure.
And when was that? 1980, I think, was 45 years ago or so. I could be off a little bit on that. But the fact of the matter is that disaster was minuscule compared to Deepwater Horizon. But people will still think of Valdez first, mm-hmm, because it's in Alaska. It's in a place that people view as beautiful in nature. This is another reason companies don't want to expand their businesses up there, because in their mind, hey, if we have a disaster along the Gulf of Mexico, people will talk about it for 6 months. But if we have a disaster in Alaska, people are going to talk about it for 50 years. They literally think about this stuff, mm-hmm, right? And that's why we're...
Whoops.
He got so...
Somebody yanked Mr. Global off our live stream.
Oh my God, Jane. They were all right.
He was here and now he's gone. We will try to reconnect with Mr. Global on the live stream and get him back on the air. We've never had this problem with Mr. Global before.
But that was just mid-sentence, too. Like, usually they have the decency to freeze up first so we have an idea.
No,
but
he was
just like magic. But that kind of blows my mind that Alaska, and I looked it up, and it happened in 1989, the Exxon Valdez spill. And it's almost like, and I will confirm with him once he returns, it's almost like a marketing thing, too, is like Alaska is dangerous to drill in, because if they're... Oh, he's back. There he is.
There we go.
Welcome back, Mr. Global.
Yes. You got lucky. I got lucky.
So you were saying before the internet had its way, that they take into mind about doing work in Alaska because of the history there with Exxon Valdez, and that it almost seems, and forgive me if I don't want to sound insulting to them or anybody, but that's almost like a marketing thing too. It's like the marketing of Alaska for oil is hard because everyone immediately goes to that.
Yes.
Well, and
it's the same reason. It's the same reason they can't get any traction in Anwar, right? It's if Anwar was in West Texas, everybody would want a piece of it because it's West Texas.
Explain what Anwar is for folks who don't know.
The Alaska National Wildlife Refuge that Donald Trump keeps trying to open up for oil and gas drilling, and nobody will buy any leases. You know, we've done this 3 times now, had lease sales up there. They think there's a lot of oil there. It's completely unproven. It's north and west or north and east of Prudhoe Bay. It's an untouched area of Alaska where Trump is convinced we need to drill. I don't know why Trump thinks he knows anything about where we need to drill, but nobody wants to go there. It is a hot button issue. It's a topic. It would create, you know, believe it or not, as bad as a reputation as big oil companies have, they do care about their image and their brand, and they're not going. That's the last thing they need is to look even worse.
So what you're saying, Matt, is that these leases are available to drill in these areas, but oil and gas companies are like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Let somebody else stick their neck out. Again, on the off chance that something goes wrong, and that's going to stay in the public's memory for a really long time. By the way, it's really interesting to me, and I know that you're right about the Exxon Valdez staying in folks' memories more than the Deepwater Horizon rupture, but I remember watching the film of that thing just gushing oil for days, and it was horrific.
Yeah.
But you're right, it was under the surface, and we didn't necessarily see the poor seabirds covered in oil, so it didn't have the same impact.
It's just, call it vanity, call it whatever, but if something terrible happens out in the desert of Texas, people don't care as much as if it happens in the forest in Alaska. You know what I mean? That's just human nature. There's nothing wrong with it. That's just how it is.
And now it's a monetized business. It's called optics. Called optics. And yeah, I can't believe I'm about to say this. That actually makes me feel something of love for these oil companies to say, you know what? We don't need to go to Anwar to do this. We don't need to, risk this for, as you said, unproven oil amounts that could also affect that part of the world and the animals that live in it.
Well, and as you said too, Matt, drilling is really expensive, and exploration in and of itself is very, very expensive.
Yeah, and no place more expensive than where Donald Trump wants them to do it. And we're laying down rigs in places where it's fairly cheap to drill. We're certainly not going to be doing any drilling in the most expensive places in the world to drill. Like, it's just...
It's not a thing.
Yeah.
They don't get it.
Yeah. And one of the things I think, I can't speak for Jane or Kelvin here, one of the things I've learned is that, you know, it sounds crazy, but like, you know, these oil companies just, they don't want to drill oil. They want to make money, and making money comes from drilling oil, and they're going to drill oil when they can find, and they do the research. I mean, how long of research do they do on a piece of property before they even put a bit of equipment down to find out this is how much we can get, this is how much we can net, and we're going to make a profit? If not, we're going to move on to another part of the country or the world.
Yeah, and with today's technology, it's very fast. It's,
yeah.
Data mining systems built with AI. It used to be years, now it's days. So
we're going to continue our conversation with Matt Randolph. He is Mr. Global Oil and Gas Industry Expert. You can always join us at 855-752-4842. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-471-9773. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you, except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-471-9773, 800-471-9773. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-471-9773 or BigLou.com. That's 800-471-9773 or BigLou.com.
Amery Chevrolet makes the car buying process simple and painless. Whether you're looking to upgrade to something bigger because of your growing family, or you want the adrenaline and want the rush of a two-door sports car for a weekend getaway at the lake, Amery Chevrolet has something for everyone. Stop into their modern showroom today, and any one of their friendly staff will be happy to assist you in your car buying journey. Located along Highway 46 on Amery's south side, Amery Chevrolet is here when you need them.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed two election bills May 2nd, one of which includes provisions for poll workers to challenge the citizenship of voters in the polling place, a ban on ranked choice voting, and a higher bar for third parties. Among several new provisions, House File 954 authorizes state election officials to access federal agency databases and gives local election officials authority to challenge citizenship of a registered voter at the polls. A recent presidential executive order now allows access to those databases. If a voter is not able to provide documentation at the polls, they would be forced to use a provisional ballot. Only days before the 2024 election, the Secretary of State's office challenged the eligibility of over 2,100 registered voters. Most were naturalized citizens or data errors, while 277 were registered non-citizens. Of those, only 35 voted out of 1.7 million ballots cast. Pro-voter groups argue such mass challenges intimidate legitimate naturalized citizens from voting. Two provisions in 954 attempt to protect major party power. It bans ranked choice voting for any election in Iowa and raises the bar for third parties to field candidates. Third parties now need to garner 2% of the vote in three consecutive elections to qualify for the ballot. We have more on HF 954 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. It is Monday. We're joined by Matt Randolph, Mr. Global Oil and Gas Industry Expert. And we were talking about the pipeline in Alaska that the Trump administration is all touting now. And we wanted to talk a little bit about gas prices, too.
Yeah. In the previous section, Matt, we were talking about the notion of basically cutting the prices of energy in half. And one of the things that people always talk about, and it's a real thing, it's gas prices. And we've talked extensively about gas prices here. But and you discussed the point of when prices of oil are low, that's when gas prices can go down. But that also means that the oil companies aren't making a profit. And I want to harken back to 2020, where some of us were paying 89, 99 cents a gallon for gas because the demand was so low, the price of oil was so far down. What damage did that do to oil companies as far as like their bottom line? I mean, like I'm asking the question basically, it's like, this is why we won't see gas prices lower that low, because they can't afford to do that, period.
You must be muted, Matt.
Technology.
Got me?
Yep.
Okay. The first time in history, oil prices went negative.
Wow.
And then when they stopped being negative, they were still like, you know, $10, $15, $20 a barrel. We had the largest oversupply of oil and gas we've ever had in history. And they couldn't hardly give the stuff away, right? But they were losing their shirts.
Now we lost you again.
Matt, you're muted again.
There we go.
There we go.
Now we
got rid of the mic.
There we go.
Yeah. But yeah, oil went negative and then it was really low and companies were losing their shirt. And if you're paying 99 cents for a gallon of gas, you're pretty much just paying the taxes on it. Like nobody's making any money. I live in one of the cheapest states in the country for gas. And if I was paying 99 cents, it's everyone in the supply chain is losing money except for the tax collectors. There's no profit anywhere. But the world would have to completely stop for us to get back to those prices again. There's no possibility of that happening with people still driving and business going on, you know, on a normal function every day. It's not a thing that can happen.
I guess my point, and that's the point I like to make to people, is like there's no incentive for oil companies to cut
their own profits,
to create a world in which we pay far less and they somehow make money. If that's as we said, it's not a thing. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, we're already laying down rigs like crazy. I think we're up to about 40 rigs we've lost since Trump took office, and you know, that's with oil between $60 and $65, because inflation exists with companies too, right? $60 today doesn't, you know, how far does it get you, right? Not very far. That's so essentially where oil prices are today are below $40, where if you looked back 5, 6, 7 years ago, we're having the same effect as sub $40 oil. So we're going to lose more rigs. We're going to lose oil production. And, you know, gas prices will probably continue to fall, but it's not going to be a great thing.
855-752-4842 if you'd like to join the conversation. Jack from Merrimack. Jack, we got about 2 minutes left. Thank you for joining us. What did you want to say?
I had a couple of things, but let's just look at this. Can Matt explain what the depletion allowance is and how it works, please?
Did you hear that, Matt?
Yes. So the depletion allowance is one of the tax deductions that oil companies are allowed to take. So let's say you have, we'll just try to keep it simple. Let's say you have, you know, 10 acres of mineral rights, and there's a specific amount of oil and gas that is expected to be in that 10 acres, and you own that oil and gas, right? As it depletes, the value of that asset is dropping, and you get to take a tax deduction on the loss of the value of that asset. Does that make sense?
Does that explain it for you, Jack?
It would.
That explains what it is, but why is it? Because you're producing, you're getting profits from that oil that's been pumped out of there.
Exactly. I didn't say it was fair or correct. I just said this is what it is.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's just like the intangible drilling cost deduction. You know, you're getting all of this value, but you're getting to write off 100% of that as well. So yeah, I understand.
We had another question on the live stream, Matt, and I don't know how much time we're going to have to get into this. We only got about a minute left. RFK1 says, what would happen if oil and gas became a public utility nonprofit? What would the price be then? Maybe we should mull on this and we can bring you back and kick it around next time. Because, again, we only have about a minute left unless you want to try and touch this real quickly.
That's about an hour conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Go to his YouTube channel. Go find Mr. Global on YouTube. There's tons and tons of fantastic videos there.
I would suggest also watching his story, Mr. Global's story. That's a great half an hour video of his origin story.
Absolutely. Matt Randolph is Mr. Global. Thank you so very much, Matt. Hopefully we'll get you back on in a couple. We have news coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Tensions in Los Angeles escalating over the weekend as thousands of protesters took to the streets in response to President Trump's deployment of the National Guard. Many protesters dispersing as evening fell last night. The president's travel ban on 12 countries is now in effect. Travelers from seven other countries facing restrictions. At the Foreign Desk, ABC's Matt Rivers.
What the Trump administration is saying here is that these are countries with either a history of terrorism, whether they have histories of high rates of visa overstays. These are countries that were investigated by the State Department and found to be worthy of being included in this ban. Of course, there's going to be challenges in court, just like we saw during the first Trump administration.
Another sleepless night in Ukraine as Russia unleashed